Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. When a TripAdvisor ranking of America's top 10 barbecue joints came out a couple of years ago, I, as a Kansas Cityan, fully expected my hometown to dominate the list. And while I was a bit surprised to see only one KC place on that list, I was utterly shocked to see that there was one on the list right here in Fort Myers. I had not yet been to Reuben's Smokehouse. It hadn't been open very long. And to be honest, I kind of had given up on finding good barbecue so far from my roots. But here it was, not only in the top 10, but it was ranked number 4. Well, since then, the namesake and pitmaster of the restaurant, Reuben Silva, has gone on to another venture. He and his mom sold the restaurant, and he's now working with the nonprofit, the If I Can Dream Foundation. But those barbecue and grilling skills remain, which is why I've asked Reuben to come in and talk us through all the nuances of getting the best out of the grill for this Labor Day weekend. Reuben, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So you're classically trained as a chef, and you've worked in fine dining. So when did you get interested in smoking meats in the all-American barbecue?
I started the catering company to get out of fine dining and then, you know, spend more time with my family and everything else. And what I was doing is I built a smoker to do on-site barbecue, and I was going to people's houses, doing them at parties and at parks and everything else, and, you know, created quite a following for it. And then people were asking me, when are you going to open a barbecue joint? When are you going to open a barbecue joint? Eventually, I already had the space. I had 50 seats. I was licensed for it. So I just kind of went from fine dining to catering to barbecue.
And kind of doing your own thing.
Yeah.
Did you always have an interest in barbecue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even when we were doing fine dining, we would like shove barbecue into the menu, not call it barbecue, but it was there.
Yeah, slow roasted, if you will, or slowly smoked.
Slowly smoked.
Oh, yeah, that's the classy way to say right. Barbecue, right? So you started the smokehouse with your mom. And tell me about when you got the news that you were ranked 4th in the country.
That day was a good day overall, you know.
It ended well.
However, that day I happened to be working at my other job. I was working with an environmental consulting firm in Naples, and I was on a job site doing a bat survey. And I had taken my glasses off, I turned my head, and I tore my cornea on a saw palmetto across my cornea, across the bottom of my retina, back into my cornea.
So you got poked in the eye by a saw palmetto?
Got poked really hard in the eye by a saw palmetto, ripped my eye open. I made it back to my truck, grabbed my cell phone. I had, 50 or 75 text messages, and then somehow made it back to Fort Myers that night. Broke out with horrible poison ivy up my arms, down my legs. And so for the first week of the chaos, I was smoking 600-700 pounds of meat a day with an eye patch and poison ivy all over my body.
Oh, that's the worst. And then people wanted to come and talk to the guy who just got named 4th in the country
right.
for his barbecue.
Yeah, then everybody went, show me your smoker. Oh, can you talk to us? Can you do this? I'm like, next week.
I cannot do anything.
I can smoke meat.
But your eye looks fine now.
It's better. It still reoccurs. There's a term for it now. It's like degenerative corneal something, something, something. But it opens up every couple months or so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fun.
Sorry to hear that. But you did get the good news that day.
Yeah, got the good news,
and
though.
And then business went crazy.
Yep.
And then, so you ended up selling that business to get more to normal hours again?
Yeah. Yeah, I pursued what my degree was in. And I did that for a little while, but then the 9-to-5 working for someone else in an office kind of, it wasn't really my thing, because I'd worked myself for the last 6 years in restaurants for 20. So the, kind of the slow pace of the office and everything just wasn't really my thing. So then I jumped ship and went and joined a friend of mine doing a nonprofit.
A nonprofit organization, and it mm-hmm. helps with job training for people who have disabilities.
Yeah, basically, If I Can Dream, we work hand in hand with like vocational rehab and the school district, and we do, help people with disabilities find work. And then we also do like training programs for people, like pre-employment training programs and things of that nature.
So it sounds like a great idea, but you still have that barbecue in your blood a little bit, right? So you do some grilling at home, I would imagine, a little bit
yeah.
of smoking.
Yep.
So that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. You said you didn't like the slow, methodical, but barbecuing is kind of a slow, methodical process.
Yes.
I mean, it's not one and done. You have to work on it and build up a significant amount of heat. You got to make a plan. So what would a would-be pitmaster for this weekend need to do now to get prepared? Do they need to start soaking their wood chips or logs?
It's all depends. Well, there's a lot of variables. I mean, it depends on what you're smoking. You know, if you're going to go down and do, if you're going to do ribs versus brisket versus a pork butt, whatever you're going to do, you know, allow yourself enough time to cook that piece of meat. You know, you're not going to cook a brisket or a pork butt in 2 hours and then have it on table by five when your guests arrive. You know, ribs are a different ballgame. Ribs, you can cook at a higher temperature, a little more forgiving. You can have those done in 3 or 4 hours. Brisket, pork butt, you know, you have to give yourself, you need to give yourself a full day, like not a 6 hour day, but you need to allow yourself 12, 14, 15 hours.
Really?
As far as soaking the wood goes, all smokers are different. All my smokers that we built were, you know, they're obviously a lot larger. So I was using full logs. Okay. I was also using lump charcoal with that. So my heat source was the wood and the charcoal. Because of that, I did never soak the wood because I was actually using the wood as part of the heat source. There's the a lot of the smaller smokers, they use chips. The chips you have to soak because they're so small. If you don't soak them, they'll burn up in 10 minutes.
Yeah, so, and so they're useless. They're not giving any flavor.
Right.
Most people at home, do they usually use charcoal and then put wood chunks or small logs on top of the charcoal? Is that what most people would do at home?
I don't think so because I think most smokers that you buy now are designed for either, you know, they have the, a lot of them are actually electric smokers that use pellets. Then the other ones though, yeah, some of the other ones you would use charcoal. And then use like the if you can avoid the chips, I avoid the chips and buy at least like the chunks mm-hmm. that you can buy in the bag. But yeah, to answer your question, a lot of people are going to be using charcoal as your main heat source and then adding the smoke with it. But you have to monitor it.
I've seen the chunks even at supermarkets.
Yeah, Publix.
Is there a different flavor that comes from different kinds of wood? Like, for example, apple wood we hear a lot about, hickory. Is there a difference that's notable?
Yeah, there is. I mean, some of you probably would not be able to tell the difference, especially if you're smoking something quickly, like if you're doing ribs or something like that. Sometimes you can't tell the difference in some of the hardwoods, like cherry versus apple versus, you know, other ones. But you can definitely tell the difference when you're using something a lot stronger, like mesquite or like an oak.
Those are stronger?
Yeah, those tend to give a stronger flavor.
More of that super smoky flavor.
Yeah.
That we come to associate, kind of like...
Right.
I got you. So I wanted to ask about brining. We hear about brining a lot, especially when it comes to poultry. Is there any benefit to brining other meats before smoking them, or is that only for grilling applications?
It depends on who you ask. If you ask my grandmother, she will tell you that you cannot cook a brisket without brining it. She about lost it when I explained to her that I don't brine the brisket. I smoke it, and she's like, well, it's not a brisket unless you brine it. But to me, I don't like to brine it because when you brine it, it closes up the pores on the outside of it, so it makes it a little harder to get that flavor into it. But when you're grilling it, when you're not looking for that smoke flavor, yeah, brining is great, or marinating, or whichever one you want to do.
That kind of makes sense. So the process of brining is putting a piece of meat in water that has salt and maybe a little bit of sugar diluted into mm-hmm. it, and that salt breaks down the cells on the outer portion right. of the meat. So mm-hmm. it makes sense when you're trying to get a good solid sear in a grilling scenario
right.
as opposed to smoking because, like you say, you're trying to get that smoke flavor in there.
Right.
And doesn't it create kind of a difference in color when the smoke is penetrating the meat?
Yeah.
Like around that outer edge?
Yes. Yeah. It can. I mean, the smoke ring that you're talking about, it doesn't actually come from the smoke itself. It comes from a reaction with nitrogen. So you can technically get a smoke ring if you get meat tenderizer. And I don't know if I should be telling all the people this because all the smoke husks are going to kill me, but you can take meat tenderizer and put it on meat and heat it up and get the same effect.
Pour a bunch of liquid smoke on it?
Yeah.
Have you ever used liquid smoke?
No.
I've opened it up and smelled it once.
It's...
I don't even know what that stuff is.
Well, actually, liquid smoke is kind of a neat process. They have like essentially a smoker, and then they have like a condensing unit above it. So the water that condenses within that unit also bonds with the smoke.
So it's fairly natural.
Yeah, it's actually the smoke flavor in it comes from smoke.
Huh.
It's just kind of odd.
Oh, yeah, I've never actually used it personally. But
no,
I think...
it's really strong, and it's super easy to pick out.
Yeah.
When somebody uses it.
You can tell that's easier to pick out than the difference between wood selection and your smoking.
Yeah. When somebody says, I have a smoked whatever, fill in the blank, especially like smoked fish dip. When you go to a restaurant and there's no smoker at the restaurant, they have smoked fish dip. You can pick out that flavor like that, if you know what it tastes like.
And just a drop will do you, I guess, right?
Yes.
So we've gone from brining, and then how important is a dry rub? Do you use dry rubs?
Yes, always.
What does that do? I mean, seasoning, obviously, but does it do anything as far as chemically, nope. You know, do anything to the meat?
Nope, it's just flavor.
Is there salt in your dry rub?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you put salt in there, and what else do you put in there?
It's equal parts salt and sugar for whatever, you know, whatever. There's always going to be the argument whether you use brown sugar or granulated sugar because brown sugar clumps up and you can't shake it, blah, blah, blah.
That was my next question. are we talking brown or white sugar? Okay.
A lot of people use brown sugar, love to use white sugar. I personally use brown sugar because I think it has a better flavor profile, but always equal parts sugar and salt.
And then do you add in other things like, I don't know, chili powders or anything like that?
Yeah. Again.
Dry mustard?
Yeah. Depending on what you're smoking. I mean, and that's usually for like pork and chicken. The dry rub that I use for pork and chicken has, I don't know, Colonel Sanders 11.
Every spice you can think of?
Yeah, pretty much. But for beef, I just use salt, pepper, and garlic.
Salt, pepper, and granulated garlic or garlic, not garlic salt?
No, granulated garlic, kosher salt, and fresh cracked pepper.
Okay, that's an important point because garlic salt is going to up your sodium situation.
Yeah, garlic salt's hard to manage.
Yeah, it pretty much is. So you put the dry rub on. Do you need to put it on right before you put it into the smoker, or do you leave it on a little bit so it can kind of, I don't know, ooze in there?
Put it on right before you put it in the smoker.
Do you need to reapply it?
No.
No. And then how often do you need to turn the meat when it's in the smoker? And you said for ribs, it's 2 to 3 hours. For other larger pieces like brisket or pork butt, those are going to be 8 to 10 hours, you said, in the smoker?
It all depends on the size of the brisket, depends on the smoker, depends on the temperature that you're cooking at. I mean, smoking is not – It's really not rocket science. I mean,
it feels like it though,
it
to
really
those that
does
are uninitiated.
Feel like it for a lot of people, and for me, it's just. I mean, and I will say, like, you know, cooking comes very natural for me. It's just it is a God given talent. Like I cannot play golf to save my life. I suck at golf terribly, but I can cook. And for me, it's like okay, there's a book called The Science and Lore of the Kitchen. It's basically food science. It tells you.
But it sounds like you're a science buff. I mean, that's what your degree is in.
Yeah, I like science a lot.
So the science of how these molecules change, and like you were talking about the nitrogen and the smoke ring. So
like when you – at a certain temperature, the protein will break down. I mean, that's just – it is what it is. Like when you cook – like people always say, well, my ribs are just fall off the bone, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, dude, if you put your arm in boiling water for long enough, the muscle on your bone will fall – anything will fall off the bone if you cook it long enough. You know, but the difficult part is – cooking it almost to the point where it falls apart, but not quite. It's just like brisket. Like you can cook a brisket at high temperature and it's going to fall apart. It's not going to be very good. It'll be dry. But cooking it to the point where you're not completely breaking all the bonds in it, but you're to where it retains all the water in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a different ballgame. You had, you know, cook it to 190 degrees.
So cook, you got to get your meat to 190 degrees. Is what you're saying.
But brisket.
Brisket. But you got to do that to get it to 190 degrees inside as long as it.
Yeah, because if you can do it, like I said, quickly, but by the time you get to 190 degrees here, if you're cooking at 500, you know, cook it at 500 degrees.
You can get your brisket to 190 degrees. It's just going to be
the outside
leather.
Of it's going to be 400 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of cooking it. If you're cooking it at 220, well, when you get to 190 dead center, the outside of it's still only going to be 220.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So you don't dry out the entire piece of meat trying to get that center cooked.
Yeah, but if you do that 500-degree brisket, that's going to be like brisket chewing gum. I mean, that's going to be tough to get through. Once you get meat, if you've done it and you've got your, for example, your ribs, and they're not anywhere near falling off the bone, have you just overdone it? You just got it too hot and they cook too fast? When you say you have ribs and they're not doing anything close to falling off the bone, and you're trying to do pulled pork, for example, or something like that, and you're trying to pull it and it won't shred, it's just really...
It's not cooked long enough.
It's not cooked long. Can you cook it longer, or have you already cooked it beyond its...
No, you can keep cooking it.
Keep going?
Once you get meat to about that 180 to 200 degree, like, you know, pork butt, cook it to like 200, 215, once it starts falling apart... There's no going back together. Like, it doesn't matter. You can cook it as long as you want. It's still always going to fall apart. Toughness is never a sign that, oh, I cooked it too long. It's undercooked.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's your recommendation for barbecue sauce? Do you need to be putting sauce on while you're smoking, or is that something to add later?
That is a debate in the barbecue world, like, you know, Ford versus Chevy. It's just, I mean, a lot of guys, there's a lot of good books out there, and a lot of them will recommend that you sauce it before you start smoking it, especially when you're talking about like mustard sauces and things like that. Sauce it before you smoke it. It's a different flavor, and it's just personal preference. I don't sauce anything at all. I mean, I smoke my meat, put it on the table, and then I'll put a sauce selection for them. You can use whatever meat you want. Ribs are a little bit different because if you want a glaze on there, obviously you have to put it on the ribs in heat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the sugars aren't going to break down and become a glaze when they're on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all personal preference.
So what kind of sauces do you like to make? Do you like to do the tomato or the North Carolina style, the vinegar?
I'm kind of a sauce whore in that aspect.
You're like, I'll take anything.
I have an appreciation for all of them. Like the Carolina sauces, the heavy vinegar and stuff like that, I love those. I know some people are just, they want their sauce to taste like brown sugar. It's just
like KC Masterpiece.
Yes. Some people like that KC Masterpiece, that generic,
which kind of
like,
irritates
smoky,
me because
sweet.
That's not really what Kansas City barbecue sauce is like.
Yeah, it is. It's called KC Masterpiece.
I know it's branded that way, but it's incorrect.
Kansas City Masterpiece. That's obviously all you guys eat up there.
No. I don't even know if they sell that in Kansas City anymore. It's all Gates or Oklahoma Joe's now. Everybody's pretty excited. They made the list.
I saw that.
But they didn't make it up to number four. I think, what were they? I don't remember. So then I wanted to ask a little bit about different kinds of meats. I mean, everybody kind of is doing, you know, the ribs and like we mentioned, the pork butt and the brisket. Are there other things that lend themselves well to smoking, things like turkey or chicken?
Yeah. So every Thanksgiving and every Easter, I smoke a duck and I smoke lamb. I'm the only person who eats them, but they are absolutely phenomenal, especially like a whole smoked duck. Because when you leave it whole and you smoke it, all the fat that renders off that duck breast stays within that duck, and it's the best thing ever.
Really? That would be fun to try. I'm going to have to get another smoker.
Prime rib. I mean, we always did a prime rib night. Prime rib smokes beautifully.
Are there any non-meat things that can smoke? Any veggies or anything like that, or is that blasphemy?
I usually tell people, like, if you're going to smoke something, like truly smoke it, make sure it has a high fat content. Because if you stick like this super lean meat in there, it dries out so quickly. You know, it just doesn't bid well for smoking.
Can you put any sides in your smoker? Like, I don't know, beans and stuff in a pot? Can you do anything like that?
You can, but it's hard to get the flavor in there because it's obviously enclosed in a pot. So
yeah.
You have one surface area. But you can. I mean, people heat up things in smokers all the time.
Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, I guess you could use it as a heating tool to keep things at that low temperature, so it's perfect.
Yeah,
to
if you have a big enough smoker, like we did on site, I would cook all my sides at the restaurant, but I would keep them hot in my smoker.
So, how hard is it to keep the temperature correct in a smoker? How often do you have to go back and check that thing?
It depends on what kind of smoke you have. They have a lot of. Like the pellet smokers, a lot of the big ones, they're coming out with now, well, have been coming out with for 20 years, but like Stumps and those guys, you can actually connect a barbecue guru to it that has a fan in it that it regulates your temperature inside the smoker, and it goes to your iPhone. It makes smoke, like you can sit on your couch and watch football.
In the air conditioning
and adjust your temperature on your smoker.
Wow. That's...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I've seen guys use them at competitions where they have, like, they come up, they pull up, they've got a Stumps, it sits on the back, they sit in their trailer watching TV, they've got the barbecue guru on their phone, and they just sit there all night adjusting temperature.
Really?
It's insane.
When I think about barbecue, I think about tradition, I think about,
yeah, I'm not a fan of them.
Swatting mosquitoes sitting out there.
Right.
And
I mean, you might have to just go buy it at that point.
I know.
It's
kind of like you're not really that involved. I mean,
no, I like to sit out back and hang out. Barbecue.
Yeah, it's kind of an experience more than just an end product. So let's go from smoking and barbecuing to what is often just called barbecuing, but it's really grilling. So what are some tips for people that are doing grilling? When you're grilling a steak or a pork chop or chicken breasts,
right.
I mean, is always are you always looking to do the sear for the cross and sear for the crosshatch so it has the little crisscross grill marks and then set it to the side away from the direct flame? Is that always standard procedure?
kind of, yeah. I mean, it depends on how meticulous you are. If you want grill marks on it to look beautiful and look like a, you know, Heinz 57 commercial, sure, that's awesome. but yeah, I mean, grilling, you got to remember that grilling is, it's a high heat. It's a high heat process. You know, your grill should be like 600 degrees and you're going to grill it. You know, that's the difference between grilling and barbecuing, which by the way, you know, don't tell your friends you're having a barbecue and then they show up and you have a propane grill and you're doing hamburgers and hot dogs. That's not a barbecue.
Yeah.
That's a cookout.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, to answer your question, barbecue is traditionally low and slow. Barbecue, the word, you know, it means cooking with wood.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from an old African word, something, but it means cooking with wood. And grilling is high heat. Grilling is essentially like, it's, you know, cooking on your stove, but you're cooking outside with charcoal.
Yeah, which is great because that smoke can get a little bit much, especially with the ribeye.
Yes.
So what temperature do you need to get your grill to before you even have your meat approach it when you're trying to grill?
Depends on what you're grilling. I mean, some things are more forgiving than others. Like hamburgers, you can cook at really high temperature and not, you know, destroy it. So like hamburgers, you need to be up there. You need to be 500-600 degrees. Like if you look in your typical commercial kitchen, if you look at their gas grill that they have up there, those are usually 600-700 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing something for the kids, like hot dogs tend to burn pretty quick. So, you know, cook those 300-400 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken, chickens can be kind of forgiving, but again, you can't cook a piece of chicken at 650 degrees for 10 minutes without it burning. So like you said earlier, mark your chicken off and then put it, you know, to the side.
Away from the direct heat.
Yeah, offset. Don't keep it on direct heat. You know, I always, when I set up my grill, because I still have a traditional Weber grill, I stack all my charcoal to one side. I grill on 3/4 of it. And as things get marked, I set them off to the side.
Mm-hmm. So there are certain things that you're supposed to grill, steaks, pork chops, pieces of chicken. You're not supposed to grill a brisket, correct?
No.
You're not supposed to grill a pork butt.
No.
Or ribs. Mm-hmm. Are there any things that you would say are up for grabs as far as being able to be put on the grill that could be seen in a different light? I mean, could you ever grill like a thin slice of pork belly?
Pork belly you can. It turns out okay. Things like brisket and pork butt and all that stuff, that has to be cooked to such a high temperature to break down. Because
mm-hmm.
if you take a steak, you cook it rare, you cook it to 110 degrees internally, it eats great. Like your, you know, tenderloin or sirloin, whatever. If you take a piece of brisket and hack it off and cook it to 110 degrees, it's going to be like a piece of rubber. Because that particular piece of meat has to be cooked at that certain temperature so that it breaks down and it's edible.
Yeah, certain muscles just have certain parts of the protein, I should say.
Right, and ribs, I mean, if you have like back ribs, you know, that's cut off of the loin, so it's a piece of the pork loin, essentially. You can grill those if you're careful. You can grill them at lower temperatures, you know, 300 degrees, and get away with that.
Yeah. And if you don't have a smoker, just do an oven application probably with the ribs. Might work out a little bit better. And then I wanted to talk to you a little bit about fish. How difficult is it? I've not been brave enough to do fish on my grill because I'm just sure that it's going to stick and I'm not going to be able to chisel that thing off.
It depends on what kind of fish. If you have a thinner fillet, like if you're grilling like flounder.
Dover sole, no.
Yeah, Dover sole, turbo, keep it off your grill.
That would not be good. But what are some good fish down here that are kind of grill ready?
Grouper.
Grouper?
Grouper, cobia, swordfish. Snapper to a certain degree if you have a bigger snapper.
Mm-hmm.
There's several down here as long as the fillet was big enough when they broke it down. You know, like a snapper could be an 8-ounce fillet. I wouldn't recommend grilling it. But if you have a bigger snapper where you're cutting off 8-ounce pieces off a larger fillet and it's thicker, you can grill that. The name of the game is having a clean grill, making sure it's super hot, and just be careful with it.
So super clean. Do you want to brush it with olive oil or anything?
Yes.
So clean your grill, mm-hmm. brush that thing with olive oil, and get it hot. Like, you're talking about like 600 degrees?
Yeah, but I would brush it with probably like canola oil just because it has such a
higher smoke point
than olive oil.
Good idea. Good plan. So you put it on for what, a minute and a half or something, and then flip it? And what if it has skin on it?
You could still grill it. The fish with skin on it is actually can be a little more forgiving, depending on what kind of fish it is. Mm-hmm. But like trout, for example, the skin on trout is so delicate, it can be hard to grill. But then if you get something like snapper or striped bass, which has been scaled, it's a little bit thicker, more leathery. So you can use that a little bit better.
So if it has a skin on, do you have to score it so it doesn't curl up on you? Because whenever I do things in the pan, they end up curling up.
You should, and sometimes that doesn't even work.
And do you want to start skin side down or skin side up on a grill?
Well, a smarter gentleman than myself always told me, chart with the presentation side down. So whatever side you want to present to your guest, that side's going to start down because you only want to turn it once.
Okay. That's not a bad idea. So, and any tips for grilling veggies? Is it kind of similar to grilling fish, making sure that you have a clean grill?
Again, depends on the vegetable. But yes, make sure your grill's clean, make sure it's hot, and just monitor it.
And keep an eye on it.
Yeah, it's not set it and forget it.
So do you need to maybe brush it with oil or anything also to make sure it doesn't stick?
Yeah, and going back to what you said before, vegetables are definitely something great for marinating before you grill them. I wouldn't use anything too high in sugar because, obviously it's going to burn faster.
Oh, sugar burns faster?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll make a messier grill if you have, like, a really sugary marinade, like teriyaki, when people grill with teriyaki. Oh, it's such a mess.
What's your feeling about when grilling, people kind of brushing things with Worcestershire sauce or with a soy sauce or something like that?
It's all personal flavor, but it can be difficult to get those flavors into the product while you're cooking it. Because once you sear it, it closes the outside.
So it'll just roll right off.
Yeah, so it's hard to get that flavor into the product.
Like water on a duck's back or yes. Worcestershire sauce on a duck's back.
Yes.
Which would be a waste of Worcestershire sauce. Correct? It would just roll right off.
Yeah.
So getting a little bit more serious now, in light of recent storms that we've had with power outages and the grill being the only cooking medium most mm-hmm. people have when they have these kind of power outages, what should people do to use up what is rapidly defrosting in their freezer? Do they need to start cooking things off pretty quickly, do you think? Or just kind of – what would be your advice to someone facing that?
Not to state the total obvious, but you have to thaw it out first. Not that you can help it in that situation. It's thawing out anyway. But if you have a deep freezer and it's packed full of stuff, all situations are different. But if they're planning on getting your power back on within, 24 hours, obviously just leave it alone because that stuff's going to stay frozen in there. It's not going to thaw out in 24 hours if you have a chest freezer full of stuff. But once that stuff starts to thaw out, once it gets above, everything in there starts getting to that, 40 degree mark, you need to start using it up as fast as you can.
You need to start grilling and feeding everybody that's stuck there.
Yeah.
And then are there certain cooking utensils that you can use on the grill or some that you would not? I mean,
not plastic, obviously, but
things with plastic handles, I guess.
Yeah, plastic. Oh, yeah. Like actual pots and pans. Yeah. when you're cooking high temperatures, your Teflon coated stuff can get damaged when you start, really getting into that high temperature stuff. Plastic handles are a nightmare because they will actually melt faster than you think.
Yeah, I've done that.
Right.
It's been an experience. That and the little bones on a rack of lamb.
Yes, those become shards.
Those become little charred shards of remains, and
yes.
They're also dangerous.
Yeah.
Not as dangerous maybe as a saw palmetto when you're walking out surveying for hooded bats.
Those things, man, they will pop out of nowhere.
I just can't believe that happened. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and talking to us about barbecuing, smoking, grilling, all of that. It's been an interesting discussion.
Of course.
Thanks for coming in.
You got it.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.